All right, so we're in Matthew chapter 9, Ezekiel 34, and the principle we're going to look about tonight is the principle of compassion. And all these principles deal with leading biblically. So we are in Matthew 9 to start with, and we're going to start in verse 35, read down to verse 38. And Jesus went about all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and healing every sickness and every disease among the people. But when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with, there's the word, compassion on them, because they fainted and were scattered abroad as sheep having no shepherd. Then said he unto his disciples, the harvest truly is plenteous, but the laborers are few. Pray ye therefore the Lord of the harvest that he will send forth laborers into his harvest. Now if you turn with me over to Ezekiel 34, and we're going to look at the first six verses of Ezekiel together. Ezekiel chapter 34, I begin in verse number 1. And the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel. Prophesy and say unto them, Thus saith the Lord unto the shepherds, Woe be to the shepherds of Israel that do, now watch this, that do feed themselves. Should not the shepherds feed the flocks? You eat the fat, and you clothe you with the wool. You kill them and are fed, but you feed not the flock. In other words, you take advantage of them. You get all you can get from them, but you're not doing anything to help them. The diseased have you not strengthened. Neither have you healed that which was sick. Neither have you bound up that which was broken. Neither have you brought again that which was driven away. Neither have you sought that which was lost. But with force and with cruelty have you ruled them. And they were scattered, because there is no shepherd. Now, you notice how this kind of ties into what he was saying in Matthew 9. And they were scattered because there is no shepherd. And they became meat to all the beasts of the field when they were scattered. My sheep wandered through all the mountains and upon every high hill. Yea, my flock was scattered upon the face of the earth, and none did search or seek after them. Now, as we study these various principles that we're looking at, and this is only the third, this is the fourth lesson, but only the third principle we looked at. We looked at the principle of meekness, the principle of, and the principle of compassion. Principle of something. What was it? Man, it's the tip of my tongue. What was last week? Principle of remembering something like, was it? Meekness. That was number one. And I knew this. What? Okay. We'll come up with it in a moment. If someone wants to look at their previous notes and tell me, I'd appreciate it. All right. Principle of meekness. Principle of what? No, that was not it. No, it was not. But you're doing as good as me. So.
Sacrifice.
There it is. Score. Samuel Milam, Family of the Week, comes through. Good job. HBI and all of that. All right, so we had the principle of meekness, we had the principle of sacrifice, and the principle of compassion. Now, I say that because all of these, okay, we're studying all these various principles. And so there's two things to understand. First is this, these principles apply to all of us. These aren't the first time you heard about meekness or sacrifice or compassion. And so you may say, well, Pastor White, this sounds really like basic Christianity. Well, all of these things are true for all believers. And I'm not denying that. It's not just to leaders, it's to everyone. That's true. But the way we're looking at them with the specific importance they have in leadership. So if we want to lead biblically, these things need to be there because these are important things. Let me just say this. Leadership always demands more from us. Leaders are the ones who should be doing the more of the labor, the more of the meekness, the more of the sacrifice, the more of what we'll look at tonight, compassion. Leadership demands more from us. Leadership is not how we can sit back, take it easy, and let the peons do all the work. That's how the world looks at it. In fact, that's what Jesus said to disciples. That's not the way we are as believers. We understand that leadership takes the initiative. Leadership does the work. See, Pastor White, how do you spell leadership? Four letters, W-O-R-K. That's how you spell leadership. It's work. All right? So that's the first thing we understand. These are not novel principles that only leaders do. These are principles that we all, as believers, live, but they're especially true as leaders because leadership demands more from us. That's the first idea about these principles. And the second idea is this. that these principles apply collectively, not separately. It's not like you only have to do the one principle at a time. Typically, in any situation, multiple principles will apply. Wisdom is needed to know which ones apply and which ones takes precedence or priority. We looked at three. We looked at meekness, sacrifice, and compassion. Now, in a given situation, all three may apply to that situation. And you have to say, okay, all three apply, but which one takes precedence? Which one do I need to do more of or make sure this one takes priority over the other two? And that takes wisdom. So wisdom is needed to know which ones apply and which one takes precedence. And then, now watch this, and you're going to have maturity to learn from your mistakes. Because you're not always going to get it right. You're going to think this one takes priority and it didn't. It was that one. You say, okay, well, I need to learn. Or maybe one you didn't even apply that you should have applied. So that's how we look at these principles. Okay, they apply to all of us, but especially true if we're going to lead. And all of the principles apply, and we have need wisdom and maturity as we try to apply them to our particular situations. Now, concerning compassion. Honestly, and I do mean this honestly, my sense of humor, which is kind of dry, it's kind of sarcastic, does get me in trouble at times. Because I'm saying things jokingly, but because I don't necessarily look like I'm joking, people don't think I'm joking. They think I'm being serious. And it gets me in trouble. And part of that has got me in trouble when it comes to the idea of compassion, because they'll say, Pastor White, why are you talking about emotions? You hate emotions. No, I do not hate emotions, okay? I don't reject emotions. I don't hate emotions. In fact, I say the opposite is true. I believe in emotions. I believe we all should be emotional. The truth is this. If you don't have emotions, you're not human, or at least you're not normal. If you found someone who had no emotions, that's kind of a psychopath, is it not? Like, you cannot have any emotions about you. That's kind of weird. Okay, so I do believe that we ought to have emotions. What I have rejected or have spoke against is letting the emotions overrule everything else in our lives. And some people do that. That's all they have is emotions. That is what I reject. Or their emotions allow them or cause them or somehow create this compromise over the principle. I'm not against emotion, but I do think principles take priority. We need to do right even if it's hard. We need to do right even if it's sad. We need to do right even if people don't like us for it. We need to do what's right to do. And so I do believe in compassion. So I'll make sure I say that clearly. And I believe in emotions. But as we look at this particular principle, I do want to give you two caveats before I give you. I only have 2 points. They're kind of broad and maybe a little bit wordy, so it'll take a little bit of time to get through both. But I want to give you a couple of caveats about this particular principle. First caveat is this. Compassion must be exercised in connection with other principles. Seldom do we only operate with the principle of compassion. Usually other principles are going to work along with it. Compassion may be the dominating principle. It may be the serving principle that's helping the other principle, but seldom, if any, it's ever going to be by itself. That's just the way it is. And so we have to understand that we need to have compassion, but our compassion should never overrule the other things that we're doing, because it seldom overrules it. Let me give you an example of what I mean. Go with me to 1 Timothy. I read a book once, and the book said, The Tragedy of American Compassion. And what they're saying is this, that people are letting compassion cause them to respond in such a way that there actually was a hurting to people. You know, if someone is a drunk, they don't need you to give them more money for booze. That's not compassion. If they're on drugs, they don't need you to help them get more drugs. That is not compassion. Okay, helping people to do wrong is not a compassion. But sometimes it's what people feel like. They feel like I need to help them, but that's not a help to them. 1 Timothy chapter number 5. So let's use a biblical example about this. So when we get to 1 Timothy chapter 5, he's going to talk about a situation in the church dealing with widows. Now, obviously, they didn't have Social Security. They didn't have welfare. They didn't have all the social safety nets that we have in America. And so they took care of the people that was in the church the best they could. But they couldn't take care of everyone because, as you could realize, that would be problematic. Resources are scarce. And so Paul is addressing Timothy about what to do about that. So 1 Timothy chapter 5, look with me at verse 3. Honor widows, and the word honor means take care and provide for them, so forth and so on. Honor widows, and he makes this statement, that are widows indeed. That doesn't mean that they, you know, you check them out and make sure they're a widow. That means they're a particular type of widow. But if any widow have children or nephews, let them learn first to show piety at home. And to them being the children, the nephews. Let them learn first to show piety at home and to requite their parents, for that is good and acceptable before God. So a widow indeed is someone who doesn't have the family take care of them. If they're in a church, no one else, I mean, here's a widow lady, they have no one to help them. Don't let them go hungry and be on the street. Take care of them. But if they got family, put it on the family because it's the family's responsibility. Look at verse number 8. But if any provide not for his own, and this is in the context now of taking care of the widows, but if any provide not for his own, especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. So especially, if talking about fellow believers who have these widows, or even in a broader sense, others who are suffering, don't put it on the church. Don't make the church pay to take care of your widowed mom. You take care of your widowed mom. That's what he's saying. Look at verse number 16. If any man or woman that believeth have widows, let them relieve them, and let not the church be charged, that it may relieve them that are widows indeed. So should they have compassion on all widows? Yes. But they also understand there's another principle, and that's the principle of responsibility, which happens to be the next lesson we're going to look at. And so the principle of responsibility said, make sure those responsible are taken care of the ones they should be taken care of. Compassion, yes, but there's other principles that work with it. So when we think about this principle of compassion, it has to be exercised in connection with other principles. If not, if all you are going to be is compassionate, you're going to end up compromising. What's going to happen? You're going to give in to things you shouldn't give in to, go along with things you shouldn't go along with in the name of compassion. And the second thing I would say about compassion is this. Compassion must be exercised. Because the flip, one side is this, all I am is compassion. Well, that ain't going to work. And then the other side is, well, then I just won't be compassionate at all. I just won't show any compassion. Well, that's not the answer either. You know, we don't avoid one ditch by going into the other ditch, as I've said many times. That's not the way we stay out of the ditch. You don't stay out of the ditch by going in the other ditch because you're still in the ditch. Okay, so that's not the answer. The answer is, I'll never be compassionate. Well, we have to be compassionate because the Lord talks about it and the Lord is our example. We, as believers, cannot lead like Christ if we don't show the same compassion as Christ. Now, we're never going to be on the same level as Christ in leadership, and we're never going to be the same level as Christ as compassion. But if our goal is to lead like Him, then our goal should also is to be compassionate like Him. And so those are both, I think, simultaneous goals for us to have. Now, we've given you the caveats really about the principles in general. We're giving you these two caveats about this particular principle. Now let's get ready to talk about the principle of compassion. Now, when I say the word compassion, everyone seems to have their own idea of what compassion is. And typically, and I'm not saying this is wrong, I'm just saying this is typically what happens. We're going to talk about compassion, and then we just start telling people what we think about compassion. I don't want to do that. I want to go back to our text and let the text be the guardrails or the fences, and we're going to stay only within that text. And because he uses the word compassion in the text, and then we're going to use Ezekiel for the second point because it's a very similar teaching as Matthew 9. Probably you could tell as we went through it. But he talks about compassion in Matthew 9, so let's just stay in this text talking about compassion. So here's our first understanding about this principle of compassion. Well, before I push the button, chapter 9, verse 36. But when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them, because they fainted and were scattered abroad as sheep having no shepherd. So the first thing I understand about compassion is this. Number one, a compassionate leader sees and considers his followers. He's concerned. He's thoughtful. He's not just overlooking. They're not just little minions that are running around doing what he wants. He's thinking about what's going on in their life. There's an old adage, it goes like this, a leader doesn't get what he expects, but what he inspects. And that is true. You do have to delegate and follow up, and all that is true. But even in the big picture of that, even in the doing of that, we can't get so caught up in the actual inspection of make sure everyone is doing what they should do and forget that they are people who have issues and situations and circumstances and needs and concerns. The problem is we get sometimes so busy inspecting every tree in our leadership, we forget there's a whole force that we need to step back and say, you know what, I got to think about the force itself. I'll give you an example of what I mean. And I've told you I'm using different, some family, some secular work, just trying to give you some different ideas of how this applies in different ways. I'll give you, as I've given many times over these years, a Long John Silver's illustration. If I had not worked there in college, I would have no illustrations in none of my sermons. I probably couldn't even preach. Now, when I was a manager at Long John Silver's, one of the things that I had to do was to, we trained them, we taught them what to do. They had certain responsibilities, whether it's the typically it was the girls out in the dining room, the guys at who were cooking. That isn't always true, but typically it was true. And they had certain things at the end of their shift. And one of the things I'd do at the end of the shift was fill all the ketchup bottles. That was it. I don't even know if they use ketchup bottles anymore. But we didn't have, I don't even, we gave out packets. We're kind of a cheap people that way. But all the ketchup bottles had to be filled. And there was a process you went through. And if you could go back in a time machine, and you probably never noticed this years ago, if you were about my age, but there's a little pickle on, I think it was Heinz, I think is what we use. And sometimes the pickles are circled, sometimes they aren't, and it always meant something to us, whether we circled them, didn't circle them. There was a policy of how things went. And so my job at the end of the shift was to go through the dining room, and I looked at all the ketchup bottles, just one of the things I had to do, and make sure they're all filled, make sure they're all wiped down, because someone told me, like Larry Sellers did, that Long John Silver's has greasy fish. He has said that their fish is greasy. I said it's because they have bad oil. Good oil is not as greasy because it drains better. But nonetheless, greasy fish causes greasy hands, which causes greasy ketchup bottles. Now, if you're sitting down at the table and all you see is greasy handprints on the ketchup bottle, what is it? What, you're like, ugh. Okay. Ugh. And so they had to wipe down the ketchup bottles, wipe down the malt vinegar bottles, and they all had to be filled. But there were a few, and if they wanted to get out and they were rushing, you know, because of business and such, and they were trying to get out because, let's say, they had somewhere to go, they would, you know, sometimes they would try not to do, maybe do like sometimes the manager would walk out and kind of stand at one end and kind of look. So the ones at the far end, they would try to make sure they tucked over and didn't fill them because the manager isn't going to walk down there and pay attention. I would always walk down there because I didn't trust the people who worked for me. And so I would say, oh, you have like three tables out there you got to fill. And they would fill them, and so forth and so on. But sometimes, I knew there was something going on with them. You could just tell, or maybe they would tell me. And they wanted to get out, and they had something to do, and you could see that they were working hard all their shift. You could tell they were running, they were rushing, they were doing everything they could to get out because they had somewhere to go when their shift was over. And at the last moment, we had maybe had a mini rush, and it put them behind, and now they're going to be late. And I would say to them, let's say it was Cindy. I said, Cindy, don't worry about it. Go home. Or leave. Punch out. You're done. I'll make sure it's finished for the next shift. I'm thinking about her. I can tell there's something going on. Now, I wouldn't do that every time. I did it very few times. But there's sometimes you've got to think about what's going on and realize that you need to be considerate about it. And that, of course, applies however it applies. I mean, if you're thinking of Joe is out in the lobby, if you're thinking of Myers Tires, okay, half full ketchup bottles, half tightened lug nuts. Big difference, right? So, I mean, some things you can't just let go. You can't say, hey, it'll be fine. Until the first curve, you're right. So you have to have a little wisdom, as we mentioned earlier. But, again, we're talking about being compassionate towards our followers by seeing and considering them. It can't always, there are rules, there are policies, there's things that have to be enforced, that is true. But you have to be thinking about the people you're leading. It's not just, I'm not just enforcing rules, I'm leading people. And so you've got to be compassionate considering what's going on in their life. A leader, in the midst of all of his other responsibilities, needs to take time to compassionately observe and consider those who are his followers. And if we use the wording of Matthew chapter 9, we'd say it this way. We should know if they are physically faint or are spiritually scattered. How would I know that? What would tell me that? Well, they may tell me that, so I should pay attention, but sometimes, many times, they don't. So, their countenance would tell me that, their attitude, their focus, their demeanor, all should mean something to us as leaders. Well, you know, as they just, I don't care. Just you do your job and just punch out and leave. You know, I don't need to worry about you.
But that if you work in a secular job and that's your attitude, that may be one thing. But if I'm concerned about, especially the spiritual leadership I have, then I have to be concerned about the people I'm leading. Now, when this compassion is shown, it'll lead us to do something. Now, what that compassion leads us to do will depend on the specific circumstance. Sometimes it will maybe encourage us or motivate us to help them or at least speak encouragingly to them. And other examples, other situations, circumstances, it will maybe cause us, there's not a whole lot we do, but we can pray for them. Maybe you look out at church and you see someone and you say, man, they just look like they're having a bad day. I'm going to pray for them right now. Well, why would I say that? Well, look at Matthew chapter 9, verse 38. He had compassion in verse 36, and his response in verse 38 is, pray ye therefore, the Lord of the harvest. So prayer is involved in this compassion that he had. I'll give you a couple other statements quickly. A leader should not be oblivious to obvious problems or concerns of his followers. That awareness should prompt us in a compassionate response. So she's not here, so if you don't tell her, she won't know. This is several months ago now. Sunday morning, Bethany got here, and I was in the front. I was talking to someone. I forget who it was. I was in the lobby talking to someone. So I saw her pull in, and she got here a little bit early, and she walked across and went in. And this is Sunday morning, so she was going back to her classroom. But you could just tell, she's my daughter. I've known her for a few years. So I'm watching her, and I could see their countenance. You could just kind of see her body language. You could see there's something bothering her. So she walked in, she walked past, and I saw whoever I was talking to, so I'm here, I'm looking out the window, and he's there. So I see them, and I see her all the way till she comes in, and I'm assuming she walked behind me because I could see her other eye that going down the hall. So I finished conversation, went back to the back and talked to her for a few minutes, just seeing what was going on. And we talked for a few minutes about some things that, was troubling her. That's what I'm talking about, being compassionate. Now, let me tell you, I'm not holding myself up as a perfect example. I fell in that miserably many times. What I'm saying is that's what you do. You pay attention. If something doesn't seem kosher here, we need to maybe check in and find out what's going on. That's a compassionate leader. Doesn't change my obligations or responsibilities in other areas, but I am going to be concerned there's a compassion there. Now let's give you the second big principle, and that is from Ezekiel 34. So the first big principle is that we see and consider. That's what we saw in Matthew 9. He saw the multitudes. He was moved with compassion. He saw what was going on. He wanted something to happen. So there's a compassion there by observation, concern, awareness. But then there's a second one, and that is in Ezekiel 34. And we're going to pick that up back in verse number 2. Son of man, prophesies against the shepherds of Israel, prophesying, saying to them, thus saith the Lord unto the shepherds, woe be to the shepherds of Israel that do feed themselves. Should not the shepherds feed the flocks? Ye eat the fat, ye clothe you with wool, and ye kill them that are fed, but ye feed not the flock. And that is a powerful verse in verse 3. Basically, you're taking advantage of people, and you don't really care about them. But he says this in verse number 4. The diseased have you not strengthened, neither have you healed that which was sick, neither have you bound up that which was broken, neither have you brought again that which was driven away, neither sought that which was lost, but with force and with cruelty have you ruled them. So here's our second big principle within this principle, or second big application of this principle of compassion. Number 2 is this. A compassionate leader understands the shortcomings of his followers. Well, why would we say that from those verses? Well, based on this. What is implied in this text was that the followers needed these things. Look at verse 4. The disease ye had not strengthened. What does that mean? They needed the strength. Neither have ye healed that which was sick. They needed that healing. Neither have you bound up that which is broken. They needed that. Okay? They were short. They weren't perfect. They weren't where you wanted them to be as sheep. They weren't perfect sheep. And he's saying, you need to be concerned about that and help them. You need to understand their shortcomings. So it's implied in this text that the followers needed fed. They needed strengthened. They needed healed. They needed bound up. Now, watch how we go with this. Followers are not there to make the leader's life easy. That may surprise you. God does not give you followers so you're going to have an easy life. God gives you followers to serve so you get more done for the Lord. Rather, compassionate leaders want to help the followers with their needs, which makes the leader's life harder. If you're going to be the leader, you've got to bear the greater burden. If you're going to be the leader, you've got to do the more of the work. That is really contrary to our flesh. Our flesh is this: I hire people to work for me so I can do less. If you ever hire people, you're going to find out you do more. Because now not only do I got to do what I was doing, but now I got to watch what they're doing and train them how to do it and kind of follow up with what they're doing and make up for what they're not getting done. Leadership always demands more from us. Let me give you another way to look at this. Leaders without compassion view followers as replaceable cogs in a machine. Have you ever worked at a job where you felt that way? There was no concern. I mean, if you didn't like it, out the door, we'll just bring another guy in here and he'll do it. Like, man, I appreciate you value me like that. But that's not how a good leader values people or looks at people or views people. So if that is your view, then here's how you respond. When a follower fails, he's simply replaced. Now, that's not good in a secular world. It's definitely not good in our families if that's how we treat our family. And it should not be in a church that way. Oh, well, you know, some people people are going to be people. They're going to do what they want to do. But we should never say like, well, you know, they were never with the program. So, you know, sometimes it's better for the church when you flush the toilet a few times, you know, get rid of the way. Okay, I've never felt that way about losing people. I understand the Lord works that way, but that's what the Lord is doing. I don't believe in backdoor revivals and all that stuff. I'm never happy when someone, and if I can say this without getting myself in too much trouble, I have felt like it was the Lord's will for me to do what the Lord wanted that encouraged people to find greener pastures in other places, but I was never happy that that was the outcome. It just, you knew that's what the Lord wanted, that's what the Lord's will was, but you're never happy for when those things happen. You're not just simply trying to replace cogs in a machine. We value people, hopefully we value people. Now, the flip side is this. Leaders with compassion view followers as unique creations of God with great potential. That's in a ministry, that's in a family, that's in a secular world. We view people that way. We treat people that way. Now watch this. If that's my view, notice the difference. The first is they're just a cog. They can't, if that cog doesn't do it, I put it out and put another cog in. No value on the person. But if I truly value a person as a leader and I'm concerned about them, they're unique creations of God, they have great potential, then I have a different response. When a follower fails, he is nurtured and helped so he can do better next time. We're not looking to replace him. We're looking to restore them. Isn't that the biblical way of doing things? Restoration? Yes, it is, in case you're wondering. That is the way to do things. Now, let me give you a couple other caveats before the conclusion. Because there's two statements. I've made both of these, and I've probably made them both to the same people at times. And sometimes it may seem contrary, but it depends on really the person. To an arrogant type person, or to someone who maybe thinks that, you know, man, aren't you glad that I'm here? Because look at all I can do. Okay, to the arrogant type person, here's what I would say. Everyone can be replaced. From me on down. There's no one in a church that's irreplaceable. There's no one in any situation that's irreplaceable. We should never think that something special about us, that, boy, if the church lost me, what would the church do? Let me tell you what the church would do. What it's always been doing for 2,000 years. The only thing that can ever that cannot be replaced is God. You are not God. You are replaceable. I'm replaceable. I've made it clear. It's no big secret. I got probably 5-8 years left as pastor. After that, I can't handle it anymore. I'm just out of it. No, I'm just kidding. But 5-8 years, then I'm going to be, you know, I'll be 62, 60. In 8 years, I'll be 65 years. I know what you're thinking. It's hard to imagine I'll be 65. But I will be. 65-year-old pastors don't usually grow churches. They can keep a church maybe at a certain level, but they don't usually grow a church. And I want the church to continue on. I don't want to be the anchor. I don't want to be the drag on the church. And so it's time for maybe a younger guy or someone with a little more energy and such. And so then I'll just, you know, I will be the guy sitting there making faces as he preaches or something. I don't know. I'll figure out something to do. I am replaceable. You are replaceable. So never get to a point where you think you can't be replaced. That's arrogance. That's pride. It should never feel that way. Now, here's the flip side. To the sincere person who is truly trying to serve, you are uniquely created by God. There is no one just like you. Both statements are true. If you get puffed up, you know what? God can pop you out and pop someone else in. Don't think that God, you know, the sun rises and sets on you and God, what would God do if you weren't here? He'd still be God. That's what he would do. Now, at the same time, though, God has created you uniquely different than everyone else. There's unique things about you. And God has a unique place for you, and there's things you can do uniquely, and you are a unique person. And so both of those statements are true. It really depends on your heart and how you apply yourself to those things. Now, I'm going to give you I got 7 more statements, despite one of my longer conclusions. So let me go through this. I'm going to try to tie these two together in some statements. Ready? Compassion and leadership may not make followers into better sheep. It's important to understand. We're not trying to get the sheep to be better. We're trying to get the shepherds to be better. See? Because sometimes we get too pragmatic about it. Now, it may make better sheep, but our first goal is to become better shepherds and let the Lord help people to be better sheep. Too often we complain about sheep being sheep instead of focusing on shepherds being shepherds. And I mean that in a leadership, whatever you're leading, whatever secularly, familially, ministry-wise, however you're leading. If you're the shepherd, the leader, that's what we focus on, being the right shepherd instead of complaining about sheep being sheep. So what does that mean? Well, here's what it looks like. Your family is going to be needy. Oh, man, there's so many. My kids are so needy. Yeah, that's what kids are. They're needy people. Okay? Your ministry is going to be demanding. Sunday morning sometimes can be a chore because there's things that have to be done, especially if you're teaching like kids Sunday school and they're, you know, you got your program, they got their program. And there's a contest of who's going to win and which program is going to rule. Okay, it can be demanding. And you got to, and you know, we just got through a good Sunday. Guess what is happening in a few more days? Another Sunday. And we get through that Sunday, then it's another Sunday. We had a good time on the bus. Man, we had to bring out the big yellow bus. That was great. But Saturday comes and you got to go visit them again and sign up more and encourage more to come. The ministry is going to be demanding. Your followers are going to be selfish. That's what followers are. There's a reason sometimes that leaders are leaders and followers are followers. Your followers are going to be selfish. If you have 10 different kids in your class, each one of those kids want your attention sometimes at the very same time. They're asking a question, them. And each one of them expects you to be answering their question, and the other 9 can go pound sand. They don't care. Okay, your followers are going to be selfish. Sheep are going to be sheep. That's what it boils down to. But you, as the leader, must be compassionate even when they're needy and demanding and selfish and sheepy. Okay? You as the leader must be compassionate, because that is what a shepherd is to be. That's why we're compassionate. That's what our job is. We're compassionate. It's what the Lord expects. All right. Let's pray.